accession number 10785, rule 3.
Colonel Boucher Myers, rule 3.
I would say the politicians were glad to see us go, but the average servant who's losing his job and his accommodation, his way of life, I think they were sad. And the shopkeepers, because they were all the losers when we left.
Now, later on, we're talking about 4850. You were a liaison officer to the Greek army. Why was that necessary?
Well, by this time, of course, the Greeks had split into their two factions, right and left. The right supporting the government under a king, and the left were the guerrillas. It was felt, because it was British taxpayers' money, I think, that Britain should have a bigger say in the running of the war. And so sent out to the Greek army, which was widespread from Yugoslavia in the north right down to the Peloponnesus in the south. And so a general was, they were divided into three divisions, A, B, and C. And I was sent up to C and ordered to report to 31 Brigade. It was quite interesting at that stage, because we couldn't travel from Athens up to C Division by road, because much of the area was controlled by the guerrillas. So I had to go by sea from Athens to Salonika, and then from Salonika I went out to a place called, a little village called Kilkis, which was the headquarters of 31 Brigade. I remember arriving there by jeep and having traveled along the main road, to be meted by a very surprised brigade commander, who said, "Well, you're lucky to get through. It's surprising you either didn't go over a mine, or the local guerrillas had allowed you through, in spite of the very large Union Jack that I flew on my jeep." There was just one British officer, a Greek interpreter, and a Greek driver. And we were sent one group like this to each of the brigades, the Greek brigades that were fighting. Now, we had no executive power. We were there to advise. And that's what we did. We listened in to every set of orders being given by the brigadier. And though you must never, at that moment, show any disapproval or disagreement with it, you always approached him afterwards and said, "Brigadier, I feel that maybe it would be better to do this or that." He would reconvene his order group and say that he had come to another decision on one or two points, and so face was saved.
Was it easy to perform that role?
I had a very good brigadier, Brigadier Pantelides. A little man, plenty of fire in his guts, and he and I got on extremely well. I got the maximum of cooperation from everybody. I started to go out to the battalions, which were along the front, along the Yugoslav frontier and the Bulgarian frontier. That was the brigade's area. And, of course, we then carried out a series of operations against the guerrillas.
How successful were they?
They were extremely successful. They were well planned and well successful. If I can be a little critical, the Greeks, like any Mediterranean person, is not the best timekeeper, and sometimes I had to impress it upon them that there was no good asking for an artillery barrage unless the troops were on the start line, ready to go on the time, and what we called in those days English time. They had to go on English time and not on Greek time.
They had to be prompt.
They had to be prompt, otherwise you lost the value of your barrage, and the enemy's heads were by now up, and therefore the casualties were greater.
Did they do that?
Yes, well, within reason.
How strong were the guerrillas at that time in that area?
Oh, they were very strong. I've forgotten the man's name. It might have been Marcos. No, I think that was the man in Cyprus. They were powerful, and they were successful as guerrillas. And then they had a change in command. I've forgotten the names of their leaders. They had a change in command, and therefore a change in tactics. Instead of going on with their guerrilla tactics, at which they were most successful and kept the Greek army well spread, they then decided to fight a conventional battle, if you like, and the battles of Gramos and Vitsi. These were two huge mountains on the Yugoslav border, and Yugoslav-Albanian border, right down in that corner. And of course this played into the Greek hands, because the Greek were now able to use their concentrated forces, their concentrated artillery, and their concentrated air attacks. And the guerrillas were well and truly beaten at the battles of Gramos and Vitsi, and they lost a considerable number of troops, and of course their morale then went down, and that really brought the Greek civil war to an end.
Why do you think the guerrillas were so strong at first?
Well, to pass a personal opinion, I would have said that if you were a thinking man and the communists came along and offered you a better way of life and showed you the big flaws in the regime as it was, you could well have been a communist without being non-Greek.
What the flaws were obvious to you, were they?
Yeah, well, I think there was this privileged, a very distinctive privileged class, rather like you see in South America today. And the peasants were very poor, very poor, and they worked long, long hours.
What role did foreign arms play in guerrilla success?
Well, you see, during the war, many of the forces, both Yugoslav and Greek, one side had stored away weapons for the eventual battles between themselves to gain control. I mean, Tito's army and Mikhailovich, they were storing weapons, and I'm sure that we supported Tito as against Mikhailovich, because Tito was doing more to fight the German. And I think the same is true in Greece. I think the guerrillas had stored away a lot of weapons which they were then able to use in the Civil War.
The last thing I'd like to ask you about is Aden, when you were there in 57-59. If you can tell me about your posting to the Aden levies.
Well, I went out to Aden. They were looking for, actually, what was happening at that stage. The army was taking over the manning by officers of the Aden protected levies. Up till then, it had been run by the RAF regiment. The RAF regiment weren't big enough, I don't think, to supply the officer cadre for this expanding unit. And so it was decided to remove the RAF regiment officers and replace them with army officers. Volunteers were asked for, and I went out I already had Arabic, having been in the Sudan Defense Force.
What was the composition of the leathers?
We had... The composition of the levies was two British officers and four Arab officers to each company. We also had a British CO and a British second in command, each battalion. And I think there was something like four battalions altogether of Aden Protected Levies. And these were drawn from the tribes. Some companies, like the Indian Army, had all one tribe. They were all Muslim, so there was no problem there. But mine was a mixed company, and therefore I think the more successful, in that we didn't have, especially when we were in the area of the tribe from which they were drawn. My company came from about five or six tribes, well separated, and so consequently there wasn't the pull of loyalty when we were fighting in their own areas.
How did the British officers work with the Arab officers?
Very well. I had a very pro-British officer as my senior Arab officer. In fact, he had been to this country on a course. He spoke good English, and he was very good.
Was there a similar situation in Aden Protectorate as there was in India, where certain groups of the population had a better reputation for martial qualities?
Oh, very definitely so. Very definitely. The tribesmen looked down on the Adenese or anybody who came from a city. In fact, he was very distinctive. He always carried a rifle and his dress was that of a tribesman, and which he wore with pride, as opposed to the city dweller. And therefore, it really, the trouble that we had didn't, when we were fighting the dissidents who worked along the Yemen border or along the out into the desert towards the Saudi Arabia, we didn't have any trouble from our troops. They were loyal to the British, to their British officers, right to the end. The trouble started in Aden. By this time I had left, of course, between the politician in Aden and the Adenese themselves. The tribesmen would have stayed loyal to a government, I'm sure, had the Adenese not taken over.
Did all the different tribes have the same martial qualities, or were there variations?
There were variations, I would say, moving left to right, from west to east, along the mountain border. I would think as you went east, so they got more martial. The further they went into the desert, I would think, the more martial they were.
What was the attitude of your soldiers towards the British officers?
Very loyal. In fact, I went up the hill eventually. The final operation that I was involved in there was the recapturing of a fort in which a political officer, a British political officer, had been imprisoned. And my company went up the hill by ourselves. We were supported by the British gunners and the British Air Force, but we had no British troops till we had actually captured the hilltop, and then they came through us as a protective force. So they were extremely good.
Why had they imprisoned this political officer?
Because it was a part of a dissident group that had its loyalties to the Yemen, and a very weak sheikh who was trying to back both sides. And so this political officer was, I feel, he had only just come from Nigeria. He didn't understand Arabia or the Arabs, and he'd got himself too deep into their country and was an easy target. And so they imprisoned him with the intention, of course, of rather like they're doing in the Lebanon now, and using him as a hostage.
Were you able to release him?
Yes, my company went up the hill and we released him that same evening.
What was the essence of the dissidents whilst you were there?
Well, I suppose there are always tribal rivalries in any Arab state. There are tribal rivalries and boundaries. And so the troubles in those days were between one tribe and another, one tribe trying to be more dominant, one tribe wanting the water holes, one time wanting the more fertile land. These were battles between tribes. And therefore then you got allegiances forming, alliances forming between one tribe and another against another couple of tribes. And so the rows used to take place between these sort of... there were tribal rows. They only became national rows when one tribe overflowed the borders as it did in the Yemen.
Was there any component to this dissidence of being anti-British?
They were anti-government. At that stage, we were, after all, it was only a protectorate. Britain didn't have it. It was a protectorate. And so they knew that Britain would eventually leave, and I suppose they were trying to establish a dominant position. Not unlike the Greek and Greek guerrillas and the Greek army.
Was there any sense of any outside power stirring up the dissidents at that time?
Well, we felt at that time that the Yemen were definitely passing them weapons and giving them access to move along the border inside their boundaries, rather like Yugoslavia did to the Greek guerrillas. It gave them tremendous advantages by allowing them to move inside the boundary, where we couldn't touch them either with troops or with artillery.
What was the Arab soldier in the protectorate levies like as a soldier? What were his qualities and weaknesses, say, as compared with a British soldier?
Well, his strength, of course, was that he understood his mountain and he could climb his mountains much quicker than any British soldier could, of course. And he could last longer without water. And to compare, first of all, the Aden Protective Levies with the Sudan Defence Force, the Sudanese soldier was a much better trained. He had been trained by British soldiers over a very long time, by British soldiers and officers for a very long time, and he was very well disciplined, the Sudanese. The Aden Protective Levies varied a little in that, first of all, we were forming new companies, new battalions, and so some of them were a bit sketchily trained, if you were, and so they weren't all that good. Those that had been well officered over the years were good and thoroughly reliable.
Did the fact that there was a religious difference between the British officers and them cause any problem?
No, that's, of course, we all went, we went down to London before we went those of us who had been selected to go out to the Aid and Protect Levy, and we were given a lot about Arab law, Muslim law, habits, and what not to do. And so I think we were conscious of that, and so naturally you, during their Ramadan, you respected that. You couldn't work them as hard as you could British troops over that period, because these men, and some of them, the more religious, weren't taking any water at all from sunrise to sunset, and so you were limited what you could do with them over that period.
Did you enjoy your time in Aden or not?
Oh, yes, yes, I did. It was soldiering. I enjoyed soldiering, and the people that I had to soldier with.